evening, it's 6 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting, the Region of Queens Municipality Regular Council, May 24th, 2022, to order. I do have, going to add to the agenda, the Mersey River Wind presentation, that's 3.2. Are there any other changes to the agenda? Not, I'll ask for approval of the agenda, moved by Councilor Charlton, seconded by Councilor Gidney, all those in favor. Presentations, Queens Community Health Board. Come forward.
We're up.
So Jackie, I know you, so perhaps you want to introduce your partner presenter?
She's gonna take it right from the get-go.
Oh, she's gonna take it right from the get-go. Okay, and I think you've been told that basically we allow 20 minutes, 10 minutes for presentation time, and then 10 minutes, which allows time, opportunity for council for questions. So.
Alrighty.
On.
So on behalf of Queens Community Health Board and our coordinator, who unfortunately wasn't able to join us today as scheduled because, you know, COVID is still sneaking in the shadows. So on behalf of myself, I'm Barbara Ross, and this is Jackie, who a lot of you seem to already know. Thank you for allowing us to join you and share our presentation on child poverty. As you may already know, a key role of the health boards in Nova Scotia is to advocate for improved health and wellness in our community. So we listen and respond to the lived experiences of people throughout Queens County and create health plans underpinned by that really meaningful community engagement process, which I for certainly, for one, was part of the planning for the health plan that is currently, So the impact of child poverty is a critical issue which consistently leads our health board discussions year in and year out. I have to say I've been with the health board for 6 years, so I'm actually coming to my natural end on the health board, I mean, hopefully no other way. Study after study describes the profound effect of poverty on our children's mental, physical development and its lasting impact into their adult life. At a local level, we see the evidence played out day in and day out. And as you can see from the slides, although childhood poverty has been reduced, I would call that pretty minutely, in the last 30 years, the uptake in food banks has increased by nearly 30%, which is pretty staggering. Nova Scotia has the highest rate of child poverty in the Atlantic provinces. It's the third highest in Canada. Child poverty rate for lone parents in Nova Scotia is 51.7%. Nova Scotia has the lowest welfare income in Canada for parents. So they're really up against it. Child poverty in rate of census in our division, so the Queen's division, is 29.3, which is pretty frightening. More than one in four of our children living in Queens County lives in poverty. So let's just put that in context. In a class, school class of 30 children, 7 of those children are going to go to bed hungry, cold, and go to school without breakfast or lunch, missing out on recreational and social activities and living on the margins. Fast enough with the doofer. By the way, doofer is a really common Scottish word for bits of equipment, just in case you were. I'm just confusing everyone. research tool used to measure development or developmental health trends and changes in populations of 5-year-olds. So these are kiddies who are going off to start school. The domains are good predictors of youth and adult health, education, and social outcomes. So as a nurse and midwife, I have certainly had lots of experience working in many poor communities, both in this country and in Scotland. And I've seen the impact of poor starts to children who have been brought up in single-parent families with very little money. So children, just for your information, they attain their most critical development in the first 5 years of life. And yet, paradoxically, the highest rate of poverty in children is under the age of 6. So we're really not doing these kids any favors. 100% of families who rely on government support, these are social benefits, as their only source of income, live in deep poverty. The lack of basic nutritious, this is what I've seen as a midwife, the lack of basic nutrition during pregnancy and early infancy has a detrimental effect on childhood development. And what we're seeing is this: a lot of our preschoolers, our 5-year-olds, are missing their basic preschool developmental milestones. Now, going back to the EDI instrument, we have a list of assessment categories that children within Nova Scotia have been measured at. Physical health and well-being, social competence, emotional maturity, language and cognitive development, communication skills, and general knowledge. These are for preschoolers. Children in Queen's County have the lowest region on the scale of children on track to meet those 5 developmental assessment categories. So that's, again, something that is not a picture we want to see. Feels like forever, but we did hold a childhood poverty forum in October of 2019. Now, we partnered with Lumenberg Health Board, the Child and Youth Network, and 50 of our stakeholders to expose the reality of poverty in our local communities. The forum was organized around the DI instrument data, which in itself notes from our first voices came from people disproportionately affected by poverty living in Queen's County. They shared personal stories of the children who have to shower at school and stuff their pockets full of toilet roll because there's no hot water at home and there's no toilet paper. These are children who have never visited a cinema, a swimming pool, a bowling alley, or a restaurant other than McDonald's. Our byline announced broken promises. Let's not allow another generation to suffer. And then there was COVID. While the outcome of the pandemic is yet to be realized, the impacts of COVID will only deepen existing disparities in our families and our communities. Improved economic benefits can and will go a long way in mitigating the impact of the pandemic, but we know that the cost of living is rising exponentially, leaving families and children vulnerable to hunger and food insecurity. Pledged to end child poverty by the year 2030. We're still waiting. The Queen's County Health Board recognizes that poverty is first and foremost about the lack of income to meet basic needs like food, rent, fuel, etc. But poverty is also about social and community exclusion. Economic inequality erodes social cohesion, empathy, passion, and leads to increased social isolation, stigma, marginalization of the poor, distrust, sometimes crime, stress, and despair. And we know that children who are exposed to the hardships of poverty in every corner of the county, not dispelling the myth that more affluent neighborhoods are immune to the problem, because we know they're not. Unfortunately, there's no mention of child poverty in the federal or provincial budget that we're aware of. We truly believe that child health is very much a community issue, so we want to fill in those gaps. Poverty is about lack of money, but it's also a lack of hope. People living in poverty often feel powerless to change their situation, and they often feel quite isolated from their communities. Single mothers especially are vulnerable to both food insecurity and its negative physical and psychological health outcomes, including dietary inadequacies, so they're not eating well, chronic illness, social exclusion, depression, mental illness, and feelings of inferiority, embarrassment, and shame. Food bank users are often referred to as recipients rather than consumers of food, which reinforces that lack of control and powerlessness that can damage their sense of identity, pride, and self-worth. We know there are going to be challenges for engagement. We know there is hidden poverty in Queen's County. I've lived in many, many places of the world, and it's one of the few places that I've visited when poverty isn't absolutely obvious. I've walked in the streets of, worked as a midwife in a public health nurse in Glasgow, Dundee, some of the worst places for poverty in Scotland, and I could point to you where the poverty was. I can't do that in Queen's, even though we know it's there. We know that the stigma of embarrassment for particularly children, we talk a lot to our colleagues in high schools and elementary schools of children who won't come forward because they're embarrassed. They don't want to feel different. They don't want to be judged. They don't even know where to go to get the help. If you can't afford to put data on your phone, don't have a car, you can't afford petrol even if you have one, then that means that lack of access to services is going to be a huge problem. The other problem we have is sustainability. They often come up with solutions, but they only last as long as the funding lasts. So where do we go from here? Municipalities form the order of government closest to our families who are living that experience of poverty and pain. They are Canada's eyes and ears on the ground, as we are with the Health Board. Going forward, we want to work together to identify and implement creative and innovative local solutions to help the people out of poverty. Thank you. Your position on the front lines of poverty, the region of municipality, can play a crucial role in guiding other orders of government, offering informed recommendations for transformational policy, action, and investment. And I've given some ideas of what we can be doing next. We need a clearer picture of poverty in our community. We need to educate people to understand that how serious the problem is. What are other municipalities doing? We know there's action in Lunenburg County that we can tap into. And we can collaborate with other organizations who are already offering some relief to people living in poverty. But what can we do today? So we've come up with some solutions. And this is just us. This is the health board members who are brainstorming some ideas that may sound a little far-fetched, but we think very passionately that these are things that we should be considering. We need to have a child poverty advocate and somebody who's got a lived experience. We were just chatting to say, both of us have experienced hard times when we were growing up and as adults and parents, but not what these children are having to deal with. Need somebody who understands what those issues are. We need to access funding, and that includes our own wellness funds that's open to anybody who would like to tap into it. We need affordable transport, maybe a bus subsidy, free accessible childcare, baby boxes. This is something that I know about from Scotland, but they can be adapted. So every baby that's born who needs would get a baby box, and we can talk about that later. A book bag. This is something that's been tried before. We're trying to get these preschoolers past those 5 milestones so that they're not going to be disadvantaged for the rest of their time in school. What about fresh food boxes? This is beyond the food bank, by the way. Peer support programs. I don't know what it's like to live abject poverty, but lots of people do. What about dental care credits? We know that for children who are not accessing, well, under their parents, who are not accessing dental care, can have a profound effect on their mental and physical health. Recreational passes, unlimited access to recreation, such an important part of their development. And finally, explore the distribution, and I was listening to the, I'm going to say wireless, people to age me when I say that, the radio this morning about different programs who were looking at excess food from hotels, from shops, that rather than dumping them, as they have been doing, is how can we get a volunteer program up and running that would deliver this food directly to folk in need. So I thank you very much for your attention, and if you have any questions, we're both here to answer them.
Questions or comments for Barbara? Councillor Charlton.
What do you particularly envision for the regional themes that I'm seeing all these, but is there certain ones or certain things that would be helpful?
Any of them. I mean, this was just our group, and I think at any given time there's maybe 10 people on our board. We're actually one of the most robust health boards in Nova Scotia and have been for many, many years. This is just our ideas off the cuff. There are so many more that I'm sure people who have businesses here in Queen's County would have some really, helpful ideas of how we can use our expertise, our knowledge, our access, addressing this really, really important group. Because these are the adults that we're going to see, well, maybe not me so much, but, this is going to be a social challenge. If we don't catch these kids as they go into elementary school, we've lost them.
And one of the things, too, from when they did the Western Zone Health Plan in 2019, one of the things they did find that the success comes with a common vision, so that's all stakeholders come to the table. You don't have little pockets here and there. Who leads that? For example, even if you look at waste, food waste, from restaurants, I mean, one of our youngest members of the board, a high school student, said, like, you know, let's take White Point, for example. You have a buffet, and that food is all thrown out. Why? You know, and I know there's health measures and things in place, but is there things that can be done as a community, as a municipality, that can make some changes in those laws so that we have people who can use that food rather than having it thrown out? We don't know. We're just coming to bring awareness of discussions we've had and wondering if you have any that are helpful as well. So, because part of the health plan in 2019, then there's new health plan going to be coming forth in 2024, but we have to start planning now, I think, or even 2023. And so in that health plan, we dealt with food insecurity, housing, recreation, wellness, and community connection. So we're starting to work more on the community connection in regards to all of this. And in the 2019 conference, or
forum,
it was one of the things that was stated very clearly was that everybody has to come to the table. So we know that, you know, this person, this group over here can connect with this group here, and we're going to make a bigger bang for our buck than if we have everybody working in isolation. So our first thought was that we would come here to talk with you to see if you know of anything, if there's anything we can do moving forward. I've been at these conferences I'm a retired teacher. 12 years ago, I've been at the conference, and it was with Lunenburg, and they came up with recommendations. I looked at the recommendations from the forum in 2019, and I just didn't know what to say, because it's the same thing. Nothing has changed, and our kids are suffering, and single moms with kids are suffering the most. And if you want to look at these documents, they're all online. Our health plan is online, as well as the poverty report card for 2021. You'll find that online, and I believe we actually sent a link to that.
We also have that recorded there.
Yeah, very interesting read.
But sad that we're still here, you know. And I think it's really, we can say, well, it's not our problem because the federal government is their problem, or it's the provincial government's problem. But it doesn't appear that that action is happening. It's not a priority. Now, I appreciate that the housing piece seems to be moving forward, but that's not helping our kids right now in Queens County. These are the ones that we're really, really worried about.
Yeah, can the municipalities have those discussions? Can you take it to the provincial government? I don't know. But I guess the thing is that we figured starting here would be probably one of the first steps to take. And as when you even think about all of the organizations that are in this community, how often do we talk about child poverty?
Barbara, to reach the children, you need to reach the parents.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So the question is, how do you educate and reach the parents?
Exactly.
Various communities try community gardens, and they seem not to be successful. Daycare had a great community garden growing on their property, but then it takes work, and people, you know, they've done kitchens where they've tried to teach low-income homeowners how to produce better meals at a lower cost. But it needs capturing of the adults.
And I think I brought that out in the presentation, that there are, I think, legitimate reasons why adults shy away. They do feel they're being identified, they're being judged. They can feel the stigma. It's just like the same kids who don't ever want to go to the breakfast club if they're the only ones, because that shows that they're the ones who aren't working hard enough, they're not trying hard enough, and So I think that's why I made the point that we really have to look at your support. If we want to, we need to have an advocate who can pull things together, who has that lived experience, who's able to make that connection without that person feeling as if they've been, you know, centered out. And I think a lot of it is embarrassment. People just don't want to feel different from each other, so they hide. That's why they don't come to services, because it looks like they're the ones that aren't doing it right, or they're not managing their money right. You know, it's all that feeling of being judged all the time.
So, from what I'm hearing, a first step for an organization, whatever it may be, would be to find that peer worker.
I think that would be a good start. But also I think there has to be a willingness for the community, and this is part of the community, we're part of the community, to come together and say, well, what can we offer?
And are you linked with North Queens as well?
Oh,
with
sure.
Your,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Laura Lee is on our board.
Well, she's actually our chair. And I deliver hot meals for Vaughn and North Queens. And I do see, because I'm in some really rural communities.
Councilor Brown?
Yeah, I sit on the Social Regional Library Board. And they've been advocating for some of these issues that you've got. One of them is they do the baby book or the book bag,
yeah,
to give everybody a book, like everybody at whatever age gets a book. And there's been a lot of talk about doing like a food library at some of the libraries, where excess food can be checked out with a library card. You know, like you go to the grocery store and you pick up your food, you have a locker combination. At a food library, somebody would be able to access that with their library card, and take some of the stigma away if they can do things like that. And these are different things that are starting in some areas. The teaching kitchens, and one of the other things that we talked about was food literacy, where people get things donated in food boxes, they don't know how to cook them. So the library they're putting together information on saying, okay, if you've got this food, this is what it pairs with, this is how you cook it, this is what it's supposed to be, don't just throw it out.
Yeah, a bit like
yeah.
Chef's plate, where
yeah.
you get the recipe,
yeah.
the food box.
But some of the libraries and staff are putting together recipes and how to cook different items that may have been donated in a food box. If the food bank gets something that says, you know, we got 500 pounds of okra, who's going to use okra? You know. But they've got it, why waste it? So they try to teach people how to use it so that it doesn't go to waste as an item. So it's ways that we can start.
And I think you put your finger on it. We just have to really be creative. But always in the back of our minds that we're not judging people, that we're, you know,
yeah.
we're finding ways to offer or to help lift people without highlighting.
Sustainability of programs. So wonderful.
Yeah.
And if everybody else was in on that as well, like it just will support each other and each other's programs so that they perhaps can be more sustainable,
yeah.
versus a standalone. So one of the things is just bringing community together and bringing the stakeholders together,
yeah.
so that we're stronger together.
And we're certainly in the market of making that happen. If there's a willingness within this room and beyond, we're certainly happy to help put that together through the stages just to kick it off.
Councillor Fancy.
I enjoyed your presentation, and again, like you said, it's a lot of talk, and we get all hyped and walk away, and unhyped. Back to our own. Things that are sustainable. I think I've just seen a lot of that one. we all grew up, yeah, we know that. One other thing that we did, so sure, I was the one, I probably looked at and just never went anywhere with it, was a fund on single parents, fund rate, going to $15 an hour, how you got a fund rate? Fund rate, you're going to be, don't get too, too point to be, or keep the way that, and there's got to be some way to, double to, have some kind of, organizational space. And I think it was one of the DC where they to be able to plug in what you have, what you want, how you work that. I think that was DC that. But I don't know if there's anything in around here locally. Or if you get 2 single moms to meet friendly and know each other, and it was a social meeting that they can share an animal. Now you've got to how did they meet? So there's gotta be some type of a program to go say, well, I'm starting, I can't live by myself on this, but if you get a bigger apartment or 3 bedroom apartment, I can share it with somebody. Know that. How do you know what so there's gotta be something out there where you can be able to create if there is a program, create a program.
And that's where I think the advocate can come up with a way of funding. I'm sure we would. I mean, we've met people in the past, you know, at various meetings who have lived experience, who sort of have taught us what we didn't know before. So these people exist. It's, you know, do we have a way of identifying that person, funding that person, giving that person a job description of what our expectations are? Okay. That's our presentation.
Councilor Charlton.
I just have a couple things that I'm thinking of allocating money in our budget this year to replace the library. We'd like to expand, you know, library services so that we'd be more used. So just thinking like that's something that the region has committed to doing. And I think there's all these partnerships at different levels that are already happening. I don't know if everyone is fully aware of them, but my daughter's in Sioux Farms. And last week they walked the library. They went to the library for a couple hours. Read a book, so, you know, I think they're well connected in our community. The pre-farmer and teacher also took on board team daycare. So she's involved at the daycare level. After the mayor's comment about starting up daycare, it sort of fell to the wayside for a couple of years. Started back up last year, not sure what's ongoing this year, but then the daycare was just the kids over and they would be checking out on the daily growth and things like that. So I think some of these things are already happening. Past councils, the Recreation for All programs, there's funding available for people and children that need it. So I think some of these things have already been happening. My question about what did you see, I just thought maybe there was a couple thoughts in this probably that were happening. But I think people are starting to do things, but I think they, as always, they can always.
There's a lot of wonderful things going on different places. But I think putting it together, compiling it, and really putting it out and having the conversation. It's the awareness, it's having the conversations can't die. We have to keep those conversations going. And just the things that have been brought up here, that's just wonderful. And we need, like, the community needs to hear about it. The county needs, we need to know about it. Everybody, when we start the conversation, I haven't had, even as a teacher, we have them all the time, as we face it every day at school. Since I retired, only because I've been a member of the health board or some other committee that I hear about, but until I joined the committees, the conversations had stopped, and I wasn't hearing a whole lot, and just wondering, where are those conversations? So we can get it together again, like bringing it back together, and listing them off, and how can we support each other in those? I'm sure there's other money elsewhere that can support those programs.
Well, and the way I just last week or two, we've all been donating with the Ukraine online auction, which is making a shrack of money. We know that people in Liverpool and around are really very social conscious. You know, they really want to help people. And it just would be nice if we could, then, you know, we could turn that into ourselves. And what can we do to help our own community? And I'm not suggesting stop donating to Ukraine, of course not. But, you know, just to say that this is a really generous community. When they see a need, when the community sees a need, they really have to get up a notch. And I would passionately ask that for our kids living in poverty.
But I also realize what you said is that, too, we try many things to bring the people to the table, and we haven't been able to do that, even with the programs. How do we bring people who really need the help? You know, after they've been identified, how? And I think that's part of the difficulty in wanting and being able to do this, provide the program, but getting.
And is it going directly to their home, helping their privacy? Is it teaching how to garden? Is it teaching budgeting? Is it teaching what to buy nutritiously versus others? Is it teaching the importance of drinking water and not flavored juice?
Yeah, I would say that's much more basic than that. I think that's a way up to it. Right now, when I talk to teachers and they say that kids, particularly over COVID, have not been eating, forget what they've been eating, they're just going to bed hungry, and you know, are not able to participate in activities because they have no money, they have no transport, they have no access. So I think we have to kind of deal with the bottom first before we talk about how we start cooking meals. We just have to make sure that these kids are getting fed.
Well, teachers are dropping off the U.S. COVID because that's the only way they were going to get food. And I mean, I know we have, you know, breakfast programs. We had a pantry. The kids could come in, get a grocery bag, go pick up their food for the weekend to get them through till 8 a.m. or whatever it might have been. And honestly, to see them come in, I would just have to leave so that to give them the dignity of being able to pick up that for the weekend. And I mean, they were hungry. So I guess the thing is that not wanting the conversation to die just because we haven't found, like we've tried, everybody tries, and we've tried and tried, but there has to be something that we can do. Can't give up all.
We can't give up, it's right.
So thank you.
Anyway, I thank you, and way back in 2000, I think it was John Lee was mayor at the time, and we actually struck a committee of, well, it was sort of an ad hoc one, and we tried to gather in all the community organizations. We had one meeting, and then there was just so many excuses about, and you really need all the federal partners at the table, the provincial partners at the table, to non-for-profits at the table. And we tried and didn't get anywhere. Now, I credit, you know, this is, it's sad statistics, but it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is vanity around this council chamber.
Oh.
And, you know, honestly, does the Regent of Queens have the time and the opportunity at this point in time to kickstart this? But would some counselors willingly engage on behalf of their constituents? Because that's what it takes sometimes, is a knock on someone's door. I just congratulate you on your, because this is hard to deal with, but Barbara, it's important, and Jackie, to find a solution through this.
Yeah.
And I'm sure every counselor here would be willing to talk about how they could help in their district to make connections, to perhaps put you in connection with people.
So we would certainly, as I mentioned earlier, if that will is there to start the conversation in a really positive way, you know, we would be happy to be part of that partnership to get things going.
And I think if someone started the process, then you may have counselors who wish to take part because they are representative of their communities and they're part of. But I can honestly tell you that right now, and I don't think there's anyone here that would dispute me, as a region of Queens, do we have a staffer or anyone who is capable of taking this project on? I would say we don't at this point in time. And I am certain that as a mayor or as counselors, we could assist you if you called a meeting, if you were interested in further information. I mean, the districts, I know in Councilor Brown's district, the school needs people. In Councilor Hawke's district, the North Queens Food Bank is phenomenal in the amount of produce, fresh produce and stuff they're distributing. It's a matter of knowing the people in your community and finding a way to reach them to make them accept the help. And that's the big part is having people accept the help provided.
Yeah, and how does like the municipalities in Nova Scotia work together? I don't know that, or if that's a possibility, finding out like what is happening. Places that have seen success decreasing the amount of children in poverty. Because it's not just Nova Scotia, it's right across Canada. And I mean, federal government over 30 years ago has stated this. And here we are. So something is not happening.
There is a new structure coming to the NSFM that's going to see us join with our regional neighbors. So that may offer a form. That will be many months before it's in place. If I have to be wary of the time. So I thank you. I know I see concern expressed by all. And somehow at it, and we'll reach out and see what counterparts are doing, be it through YMCA or whatever. But really, provincially, federally, Barbara said, you know, single women on welfare, the lowest paid in Canada. What's, why? What can our MLA do to assist in the poverty, food, children? It's provincial, federal responsibility. We can do our part.
Yeah.
You know, getting through those food rules. You know, I've worked in restaurants. A lot of the food does not go in the garbage. It is reused. It is put back. But they are not allowed to leave it. You know, once it's there, it doesn't go out the door. So those, you know, rules of provincially or whatever. So I thank you. And
thank you. Appreciate it.
To hear a completely separate one from poverty to renewable energy. Our CEO says we have one person called Mitch. Aha.
Hi, I'm Dan Roscoe. I'm the managing director of Rod Local.
Yes.
the things that drove us to meet with you today is that we're having a public meeting at Milton Hall tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, where all of this information will be available to the public. We provided more information than we'll be able to get through tonight in this package, but we wanted everyone to have it. And we, you know, this is an introduction. It's going to be a long process, and we're here to answer any questions and to, you know, this is the start of the conversation. Talk a little bit as we go through about the various roles and engagement points with the municipality that we'll have from along the way. First, we want to acknowledge that we are in Mi'kma'ki. This project is located in Mi'kma'ki, the unceded territory of the Mi'kma'ki people. Today, we're going to run through quickly. We won't touch on every slide here, but a depth background about who we are, the renewable to retail program that we're working with, the types of wind turbines, the project site, and the approval process and the work going on. And at the end, we'll talk about benefits to the community, businesses, individuals, the municipality, and so forth that this project can bring. So at a high level, we're proposing a wind farm on a tract of Crown land along the Mersey River, former land of Bowater Mersey. The parcel of Crown land that we've applied for is about 20,000 acres. All of it has been, partially harvested for 100 years with an existing road network. And part of the attraction that we have is, in addition to the land resources, the access to the transmission system, Milton, that has lots of capacity, and that substation is in Milton. This wind farm is different from every other wind farm that's been done in the province to date in the fact that it will be the first to provide energy into the renewable to retail program. A subsidiary of Roswell was awarded a license by the Utility and Review Board in October to sell clean energy directly to consumers. This project will help, the power from this project will help Nova Scotians have a choice from whom they purchase electricity from for the first time. Very, very long time. We will be producing obviously 100% local, zero emission electricity. And not only is the electricity clean, but it's we think we can sell it at a lower cost than Nova Scotia Power with more predictability over the long term because of our lack of exposure to fossil fuel prices, carbon prices. A project of this nature can generate significant local benefits, and we'll talk a little bit about those as well. I'll give you a quick background on our history. Myself, Mitch, and Dave, and a number of others in our organization all worked at a company called Scotian Windfields. For many years, we built projects from Yarmouth to Inverness, the largest of which was the Digby Neck Wind Farm, which was 30 megawatts, and we built 12 other projects. We also were involved mutually in a project in Maine. Since that time, we've started Roswell about 5 years ago to push the envelope further, not only in renewable energy generation, but in the retrofit of facilities, you know, the other side of the meter, if you will, as well as to export our experience. And we're currently working primarily in the Caribbean on renewable energy projects and retrofits as well. Renewable to retail program is unique. It was put in place 2015 within a provincial amendment, the Electricity Act, and we were the first license awarded through that program in 2021. As you can see on the diagram, the Mersey River Wind Project will feed energy to a licensed retail supplier that will be owned and operated by Roswell, and it will also interact with Nova Scotia Power for use of the grid, so that the combination of that two ends up with clean electricity being provided directly to consumers. Those consumers would stop being Nova Scotia Power customers and become customers of this new entity. We're still going through the process of building out that entity and the infrastructure, even the name, the brand, and so forth, is going to come likely in the fall, where we will be publicly available and start interacting with customers. We have had substantial conversations with a number of larger customers on the South Shore, kind of commercial and industrial customers, about their power needs, as they will make up a large portion of the first phase of our work. General, how renewable to retail works is that because the cost of electricity from renewable sources, specifically wind turbines in Nova Scotia, has come down to a point where it's actually cheaper than Nova Scotia Power's average cost. Cost of increased to a point, along with the cost of carbon and other things that are associated with it, that the average cost of wind energy is now less than their cost to generate the average cost of a kilowatt hour. That's not us saying that, that's from their own integrated resource plan, and that's why they are procuring more renewable energy for the grid in itself, which it would be in addition to this program. What this allows us to do is, because we don't have that exposure to these increasing costs, we can offer lower power rates and more sustainability in that price, because we can actually hedge a large portion of our prices to make sure that the cost won't increase over time. One of the important things that we see in not only providing clean electricity and not, you know, saving energy can help, you know, any customer in Nova Scotia. It's pretty obvious whether it's a not-for-profit or a piece of public infrastructure or a local business. But there's an important economic development aspect, is that the new businesses of our you know, 21st century economy need clean energy to be successful. If you want to open up a data center and provide services to Facebook, you better have clean electricity. If you want to make green hydrogen or biofuel or sell organic salmon to Whole Foods. These are all real examples of customers we have, by the way. You need to have a low carbon footprint in order to be in that international market. And I've been exposed to lots of conversations where companies want to come to Nova Scotia. What kind of answer will they get from Nova Scotia Power when they say, well, we need, you know, 20 megawatts of clean electricity or something like that? They don't have a program as a public utility they can even offer in that regard. So we see, not only is this going to help existing customers, but has the opportunity for local economic development. Just a bit more breakdown on the renewables retail cost. The cost of selling electricity to the customer is a combination of the cost of wind energy, cost of the tariffs that we have to pay, and our cost for managing, you know, the administration and the marketing metering of that energy. The end result, as I said, we believe that we can help customers save money in year one. So Mitch is going to walk through a few of the details of the project setting.
Hey, yeah. Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present. And we're pretty excited to be here and to go public with this project that we've been working on for a little while. So just very quickly, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. The wind turbines that we're using are much larger. It's kind of the next generation of turbines. So the generating capacity is greater, 4.5 megawatts. The rotor diameter, so that's, you know, blade, the full diameter, is 150 meters. So each blade would be 74 meters. The last kind of big procurement in Nova Scotia, the biggest turbines right now, have a rotor diameter of 114. So this is, it's just a larger machine. So, and this is kind of the new generation, and this is how, you know, the price can go down. The price per kilowatt of generating wind is basically cheaper than the larger machine. So with construction, a big part of the impact of the site and what we need is, you know, you basically need roads and lay down areas to support the foundations, and then once those are in place, then you can put the components. They're manufactured around the world, and they may not meet until they're actually together on the site. And so a lot of the work that we need to do to the site is specifically for the construction. Then after they're built, there's relatively little traffic, obviously maintenance, crews, and, you know, going in there to cut trucks. Occasionally, maybe a larger repair, but generally speaking, all of the activity on the site happens during the construction. So the project site will be located on the tract of Crownland west of Milton. It has been extensively logged, and there's a solid network of access roads on the site. So this is our meteorological test tower that's up there now. This is photos taken by a drone last fall. So here's a site plan, and I think it's in the packages there as well. So we're proposing right now 33 turbines in two phases, and that'll probably get built out over 3 years. The second phase probably broken into two construction phases. But at the end of it, you'll basically have one common site access and one common interconnection to your grid. So the Milton substation is where we're going to interconnect. And the precise route of that that transmission line going from the project site to the substation is yet to be determined. There's a few factors in that. In our Nova Scotia Power interconnection agreement, they tell us where exactly we can connect. And so, of course, which side of the substation you come in on will depend on that. And then the Crown land process as well, they've got a number of factors in determining where they would prefer to see the site access and interconnection route. So that's why they're not shown on here. There's a few options that we are investigating, and that's kind of in the process of, you know, going through this bigger picture. So that's in the package there. I'm not sure if it's clear if you have color the two phases, but there's 8 turbines in the first phase closer to Milton, and then the other 25 are in behind. And you'll notice all of the roads on this map are existing, so you can see how we're really trying to stick to the existing access roads as much as possible.
How many acres is it?
The total parcel? I think you said 20,000. I forget the number right off.
It's 20,000.
Now, in the end, the actual impact to the land that we'll need is approximately 1 hectare per turbine, because we will need a lay-down area to put the blades and the components, and then a crane pad that'll lift them back into place. So just on this, like, you know, we need room for the crane and the components, but the final, you know, the final area that we'll need will be just over 33 hectares. Okay, so approvals. Obviously, we will need municipal approval. So that's a development agreement process, and I know that you're going through plan and bylaw review right now. In the draft bylaw, it doesn't look like the wind bylaw changes much, so the idea is that it'll be a development agreement process that'll be negotiated. However, because we're on Crown land and do not own the land, we need permission from the Crown before our formal application. So we've had this conversation a little bit with we've spoken about this. So we need that letter of permission from the Crown to act as agents in the application for the development agreement, which we intend to do. Now, as of right now, because we don't have that, we're doing this presentation and a public engagement. We're just to get out in front of it, so there's no formal application, but we just want to make everyone aware that we are working on this. We do intend to, so that no one's blindsided or surprised by the process. That's why we're starting with this public engagement. Provincial, we will need an environmental assessment. That is underway. More on that later. And our federal NAV hand permit, that's all good with aeronautical obstruction. And we need, of course, interconnection agreements for Nova Scotia Power. We have a Met tower up there now measuring the wind that allows us to predict our output from the turbines. There's more information there, but I'll not spend too much time there. So the environmental assessment process, we contracted Strum Consulting, which is a well-known environmental consulting group in the province, so third party, and that's wetland, water course. They also do an alien radar campaign, which is new. So they actually have radar out 24 hours a day for a few months at a time to count birds, you know, particularly migratory windows, to know if we have, you know, may affect any major migration routes. It will involve a Mi'kmaq ecological knowledge study, archaeological survey, and of course, public engagement. So we've already been working on this since actually just about a year ago. So we've done winter tracking surveys, spring pellet group, water course and wetland delineation, bat monitoring as well. That's another thing that we need to watch out for. Lichens and rare flora, so if there's any impact to land, we need to kind of move around. So the site plan that you see now is after a lot of this field work is complete. So we've, you know, our initial thoughts, we've moved things around a little bit to avoid any impact areas that we found from our completed field work. We're not done yet. So we're still working. There's avian radar on the site right now. There's still, you know, acoustic monitoring as well. There's some wetland and water course delineation for some of the proposed access routes to the Crown. That's kind of in discussion. Fish and fish habitat, turtles, eastern rivers, ribbon snakes, other kind of wildlife stuff that's still ongoing, but we have enough understanding of the site to know where the risk areas are. So some of the biggest impact to people will be shadow and sound. So you can model that initially. So the shadow modeling, that means like a flicker is whenever the blade passes in front of the sun, and between you and the sun, I should say, and that creates a shadow for a moment, which can be annoying. Just like when you're driving in a car when there's trees going by, it's the same thing. So this is a model that shows the number of hours per year that the shadow flicker will fall on a given area. And so to do this model, they've got topography, but they assume a few things. The assumption is that there's no vegetation, right? like, so it assumes like no trees at all, which obviously isn't true. It assumes that it's always sunny and that it's always windy, because if it's not sunny and windy at the same time, you won't get that shadow flow. So this models basically the maximum potential human impact. And if you look kind of along the river, and like Milton is just off to the right on that map there, we don't really hit any halts, right? The idea is that we're back in the woods away to basically not bother people. The other modeling is sound modeling. This is obviously an item of concern for a lot of people. So the sound that's emitted by wind turbines is not different from anything else. It's just the blades that move through the air, and it does create a sound. And of course, that sound gets carried on the wind, particularly downwind, right? So this model assumes the sound level created by the turning blades. And again, this model assumes there's no vegetation, that it's always windy, and that everywhere is downwind. And what I mean by that is it's like the maximum extent in any direction that the sound may carry. So that's what these blobs mean. And so you'll notice on the right, it might be more clear in your handout, the legend of your decibels, so how loud it is. And A-weighted decibels means how loud we perceive it to be, which is kind of the important thing. And I put this little chart in here just to show you that, you know, 35 decibels is very, very quiet, fan, low speed at like 1 meter distance. And you'll see that where it gets outside near the river and near any potential receptors, it's down to that level. The other thing I should mention in this model is it doesn't assume any ambient noise. So if you're next to a river that just has a bubbling creek, you're, I don't know exactly how many decibels that is, but it means that you wouldn't hear anything quieter than that. So the takeaway from this is you can look to see where the receptors are, particularly over by Milton, and anything below 35 decibels is really not worth monitoring, because you'll never hear it anyway. So the idea is that we're back in the woods far enough away to avoid some of the troublesome impacts that people receive from wind turbines.
I'll go through the community benefits. So there's two. Wind farms in general have a number of benefits for the community, but as we are also be a retailer of electricity, we have more options in how we can have local benefits than a typical wind farm would have. So we've taken on a number of things, commitments in the development of this project, the first of which be the creation of a community dividend. This is something we've done on previous projects where we set aside funds for investment into local community initiatives. You hear about a number of them, and it's something that we've done in other projects throughout Nova Scotia. Priority access to our renewable to retail programs. You can imagine if we're going to sell electricity at a lower rate, that our interest will be significant. We want to give people from Queens County the opportunity to have first crack. We're also interested in creating a not-for-profit energy rate that can help community entities that are doing particular community services or benefits to have a preferential, if you will, energy rate. We hear all, there's always, once a month it seems like there's a story somewhere in Nova Scotia of a farmer's market or another entity that's trying to provide, whether it's social housing or some kind of community service that is struggling with higher energy costs. One of our approaches to this is not only being able to sell clean energy, but help to retrofit the buildings to be able to be a clean and flexible consumer of electricity. So switching out boilers for heat pumps and things like that help make them more electrical, which also helps save money. So these are things that we'd like to investigate further up on the community side. More traditional economic benefits, we'll have over 100 people employed temporarily on the construction, with 6 to 12 full-time employees as we grow the wind farm. From a municipal tax revenue, something that you may or may not be interested in, taxes are regulated provincially at a rate that's roughly almost $8,000 a megawatt. So if we build out this project in full, it will represent over $1 million in municipal tax revenue for the region of Queens. The last thing I wanted to highlight again under the community benefits, because I know this conversation has already come up, is the attraction of local businesses that want clean electricity to Queens County. Obviously, the former industrial lands that Bowater are of interest, and the opportunity to do things like hydrogen or bio general and to Queens County specifically, we think is a real, a big driver for this program, not only here but throughout the province. Next steps, as Mitch said, we're working with the Crown process to get that letter of agency so that we can apply for our development agreement. We've just updated our development plan with them to include all of our environmental work that we've done. So that's in the process, and we hope to get that in the next few months. We will submit our environmental assessment at some point in the summer. I think it's looking like August right now, where we'll end up submitting our environmental assessment for approval. And the interconnection process is underway through this year as well. So our target is to have all permits lined up by the end of the year. That allows us to buy wind turbines, put the orders on. We need to put a 12-month process before they arrive, and at least another 3 months to get them up and running after that point. During that period, which will be mostly 2023, we'll be building roads, power lines, and so forth to get their site ready, foundations. Local concrete companies will be happy with us. A lot of concrete, each one. But that work will go on during 2023. We hope to be able to sell power by the end of 2023. Time frames and so forth are tough to predict these days, but that's the time frame we're working. I think that's all we have. We welcome any questions.
Before I ask for questions, what time is your meeting tomorrow evening?
6 p.m. Milton Hall.
Yeah.
And it's an open drop-in session.
Oh, it's a drop-in.
It's a drop-in. It's an open house style, 6 to 8.
6 to 8.
We'll have all of this information essentially in poster board form. I think we're going to have about 8 people there from our team, 2 or 3 from our environmental team, and the rest from our own.
Questions? Mr. Brown.
So you're starting off, your first phase was 8 turbines, was it?
That's correct.
And they'll probably be in that corner closest to Nova Scotia Power's depot?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We're back to that slide here, yeah. It'll be the 8 easternmost turbines. The substation is a small black and yellow lightning bolt that's on the other side of the river. And the first 8 turbines, as you come up the hill, there's 2 rows of 4 there. That will be phase 1.
Probably a laser pointer on the end of that.
Oh, wow. Those will be the first ones. As Mitch said, these roads are all existing. Our Met Tower is right there. And those will be the first ones. Right now, we've received interest from commercial industrial clients that is greater than phase 1. So we hope to be able to move forward with at least part of phase 2 in the near future as well.
Other questions? Cheryl.
I just think that was a great presentation. It was really easy to understand.
Very welcome. Mitch and I have done this about 100 times. Public meetings in 13 different projects in Nova Scotia, so practice.
Comes across as polished, but not jaded.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Fancy?
I'm the counselor for that area.
Oh, you're aware, yes.
Oh, you're aware.
Yeah. We also know you're a power engineer at Beauwater, so you probably know more about this.
You've even read.
Yeah.
things like that. I've had a lot of talking back and forth with some of the other people who've had ideas. Not always great. Because there's like a home off in Borough who on the border of where they need to be. Talk more about that for a little bit. He has a lot of problems with the shadows. At low pulling from the turbine, sometimes you give a low hug, right? And what's the distance? What's the strategy?
There's one or two cottages and some buildings of Nova Scotia Power that are the closest, but the full-time resident, we're over 2 kilometers, which I think is this site, I mean, one of the nice things with this site is it's definitely far from houses. And I think the strictest as-of-right bylaw has a 1,000-meter setback in Nova Scotia, so that's what we use in our when we do a prospecting and constraints analysis, we start with that. What are the areas that are 1,000 meters back, and we're 2,000 plus. There's also the terrain and forestry difference that I think will make a big difference as well.
The other thing is that at other presentations, they're waiting for a license. There'll be so many licenses there to get, already got your license.
Yeah, there's a distinct difference. Every other wind farm that's been proposed, and you've heard them in Shelburne, you've heard them elsewhere, they're all bidding into a process with no touch power.
Right.
With us, we have our license, have to get permits, but really we're selling the energy to clients. You know, we need to sign up off-takers, but we're confident in that, and we have most of it spoken for already. So we're investing the money to move the project forward based on that. One of the things we will want to do over the next 6 months is solidify that, but we have a lot of interest from big kind of commercial, industrial, I'll say creditworthy off-takers, big energy users, including Freeman Lumber here in Queens, as well as another mill in Chester. We've spoken a number of companies in Halifax that are of interest. A lot of our work actually started with Killam Properties in Halifax. They wanted to secure clean energy for their apartment buildings. We've also spoken to Clearwater, KDC plants, and Irving. So a lot of interest of big consumers that, some of them have, want to reduce costs. Some of them have a corporate target to be clean by a certain time. Obviously, there's a number of other players that we can talk to as well. But that's our deliverable to check. But we're confident in our model that we'll be able to provide them. So far, no one said no yet, put it that way.
So this is going to be offered to the county residents, others, and us, so we get a special rate of getting the first chance.
That's right. We want to have, we call it priority access. We're going to have a lot of demand for these products, and we want to make sure that Queens County residents and businesses have an opportunity to benefit. We can sell energy anywhere in the province, and we will offer our services anyone in the province. But we want to have, I think it's important that Queens County gets an opportunity to have free.
Are we buying power or are we buying turbo?
No, we would be selling energy per kilowatt hour in a very similar fashion to currently buying. We would look for a longer term contract, so it's much more like a cell phone contract, I think, that you'd want to commit for certain years to pay a certain rate for energy over that period.
Buying the turbine, you could buy the whole batch.
No, we're ultimately developing. We have partners that we are to build and develop and finance the wind farm. We're simply selling energy, we are keen to talk to the municipality about your energy needs as well.
Right.
Water treatment, I would suspect, would be top among the list of users.
Queens Place.
Yes. So those are things that we'd like to talk to as well.
So your sound modeling, did you do it with the new, you say your windmills are going to be bigger? So did you do the 150?
Yes, the model, the actual wind turbine model that we're planning on using right now, gets put into that. And it's Strum, our third party provider, who does the analysis for us.
So I got some questions from some of the guys that do some hunting and fishing up in that area. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be blocking that off?
We won't. We're just leasing a small piece of land from the Crown. I don't think the Crown would plan to, what the Crown does with the rest of the land is still up to them. We'll be making the roads up there nicer, and we won't have, restrictions on access to our pool.
How are you going to, say, if I wanted to, my residents to buy the power from the wind turbine? How do I know it's coming from there?
Well, you'll get a bill from us saying that we're selling you energy. There'll be a point where you'll have to request to change your service provider, just like you're changing your TV provider or your phone provider. I think the changing from Belt and bringing on Eastlink, very similar, that's the most similar situation that you have in Nova Scotia, of breaking a, an existing monopoly and a new player coming in. It would be no different than you changing, you know, TV or cell phone or anything.
But it's not always, the power coming to my house won't always be coming from the windmills.
No, but, yeah, because the wind turbines will be variable, but all of the energy that will be sold to you will be renewable, and we have to make sure that we're putting on a surplus of renewable energy on the grid so that our customers can say they're getting 100% renewable energy. Part of the renewable to retail program is that retail access is only offered if you're providing 100% renewable. We will look at things like energy storage, batteries, hydrogen, and very interested in opportunities behind the meter to provide flexibility so that you can better align our use with the generation. Also, wind energy is very much aligned with our energy use in Nova Scotia. We use far more energy in the winter where it's windier, so there's a good alignment. You know, generally it's colder in the winter, it's windier in the winter, so there's a good alignment there between energy usage on a month-by-month basis.
I guess just curious about your involvement discussions with Acadia First Nations. Obviously there's a lot of jobs being created at the start for temporary full-time jobs. Wondering if you have any discussions with them and commitments for Indigenous employment or Mi'kmaq employment. As well, I know there are, I believe there are a number of special places up there that would be important for the Mi'kmaq people, and have you had discussions with them about protecting those areas?
Yes, so I'll answer your first question. Last question first, which would be the we'll conduct a Mi'kmaq ecological knowledge study, identify those areas. Demand for those types of services are quite constrained right now with respect to all the other wind farms that have been proposed right now. So we're in the queue for that service this summer. We're also working with Acadia. We've spoken with them both on the community engagement side, the economic development side, as well as partnership opportunities that we're open to. We don't have any definitive agreements in place with them, but we have spoken with them 3 or 4 times already, and the door is open for their input and direct involvement in the project.
One more question.
Okay, just one quick question.
Fancy?
Would you ever consider, I look at casually, the series of things all the way around, and you say you want to put back into the community.
We're very interested. We've actually spoken with 1 or 2 people that are interested in what I'll call small housing developments here. The energy needs of housing and how do you affordable housing, energy poverty associated with low income housing. It's something we, as a group, have a lot of experience with. Dave, who's our head of finance, David Howell, he's actually involved with a home builder as his quote-unquote day job. And often even, in places that we're looking at internationally, housing is an issue. How do you develop this? So we're very interested in supporting that, identifying and work to collaborate on the needs. It's something we're keenly interested. I've also worked, spent 3 years working with the Verschuren Center in Cape Breton for housing. Housing is a huge need, energy poverty. There's still hundreds of homes in Cape Breton that use coal as part of pensions from, and it's a real problem to break that cycle. But housing is an area, affordable housing, and there's a significant amount of jobs available in retrofitting. Retrofitting homes, insulating them, changing out heat pumps, upgrading electrical services and things like that. I think that's where a finance retrofit models can really help stimulate the local economy, but also help provide more confidence. So it's a topic that we're very interested in. We'd love to talk more about that.
On that note, I wish you well in your meeting. your meeting tomorrow, and we look forward to the day when and provide lesser cost clean energy. We have year-round tourism operators, we have hospitals, we have Queen's Place, we have Freedom's Mill, many places, especially business-wise, as well as homeowners, the curling clubs. We have lots of energy users. And you'll be producing that much, and we only need that much.
Yeah, we ultimately, this site, under its full production, will produce about 5% of the energy needs for Nova Scotia, electricity.
You could feed all of Queens County. We look forward to that day. And we'll see you again. And good luck tomorrow night.
Very much look forward to seeing some of you tomorrow night at our meeting.
Thanks a lot.